Hello and welcome to What a Jazz podcast. I'm your host, Elza Wisniewskita, and this is our second episode. Today we are talking with my dear friend, my dance partner, who is across Europe from me, Peter Kurtz. We are used to seeing each other every weekend or every second weekend, and now we see each other once a year or less, so it's been tough not being able to share dance, joy, and traveling together. But we do sit down and talk about our experiences, how we deal with the pandemic, what do we miss and what don't we miss about being full-time dancers, and also what are our hopes for the future of Lindy Hop communities. So without further ado, I present Peter Kurtz. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. First of all, it's really good to see you and hear your voice. It's been too long, I guess, in comparison to like 1 year ago when we were just together all the time. It's crazy to be apart for so long.
I know. But we used to be seeing each other almost every weekend, every second weekend.
Yeah.
And now it's been almost a year.
Yeah.
It's mad.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Do you think in this last year, has there been anything that you've done that you couldn't have seen yourself do like 1 year ago?
Everything.
No, like any new skills, any new talents, anything where you're like, you can be proud of it. You're like, yeah, you know what? I think you're wasted.
Yeah, definitely. Even recording this podcast, in general, all the things online, yeah. I never thought I will get to spend so much time learning them and trying out and working online and teaching online.
God, you're mad. Good at that too. I feel like on the spectrum of like people who are online capable in terms of like giving classes and having a presence, I'm very, very far to like to the side of the spectrum that's like, yeah, borderline incapable.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I remember when the pandemic started, of course, I don't think anyone could believe that it's going to last for so long. So we thought that we're just on a little break and everything's going to be back to normal. So I think a lot of people haven't jumped on online classes, but then eventually they started popping up and things started happening. And I remember you were quite resistant to start something. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that. How was that process of keeping the dance in your life throughout the pandemic?
It's a good question. I mean, I've definitely been reluctant because the part of the dance that I love and the part of the dance that really speaks to me is, I think the part of like, you know, that connects people, and the part that brings people together over the music and the very like live, you know, face-to-face interaction and like what connection means in the dance, can't be understated, you know. I can't overstate it how important that is to me. And I think like with all the online stuff, I've been really reluctant, but I've kind of had to because the, you know, probably like most international dancers and local school owners, you have to go online. You know, so we went online, had like Zoom classes for our local school, and then some of our festivals, like, you know, as you know, contact us and ask us to do some solo classes. And so it was a process of like putting that together and trying to maintain that same vibe with, you know, behind a computer screen. But I don't know. I mean, it's just like, for me, I found it almost depressing at first because I just missed live music and I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to, like, and I missed my friends, you know, because I think it's so, the dance is so much for me, it's so much more, you know, than just the aesthetic and, you know, and like the form. It's like really this all-encompassing experience. So I just found myself like, oh my God, you know, like to put it on a screen, it really felt to me like it was two-dimensionalizing it. I mean, quite like literally and figuratively, but I don't want to take away from the people who have like managed to do it so successfully and keep the community alive with, you know, themselves like pushing new content forward and you know, and offering classes. Like, I think that's been very vital. I know Alice and Remy have been doing that with Sky and Frida. I know Felipe's done it a lot with Felix, and many others have done it and are continuing to. So like, I'm really grateful they're doing it, but I also kind of feel like, well, thankfully they're doing it, because like I don't have to, because it's just, to me, it's not, you know, like I never got into the dance because of the online thing. Like, I think when I got into the dance, it was because it was like this niche thing where you get into and you kind of go underground and you see a bunch of people do it. And you're like, what is this thing? And you kind of only find out about it because you have somebody else that kind of takes you somewhere and says like, oh, check out this thing. And it, I think that kind of element of, you know, being a little bit separate from the mainstream was really exciting and interesting. And, you know, and now with the online thing, it just, right now our mainstream is our social media platforms. And so to see dance, you know, exist in like, you know, in that form, it just, I don't know, it takes away from like, for me personally, like the joy that I really derive from being a part of the scene.
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a different thing, right? From feeling like you're in a community, and especially when we got to travel so much and meet all the people and dance together, to going something where it's you and the screen. I think it's, I mean, many, many jobs and many things got affected by the pandemic, but like all the arts and like dance is one of them that got affected so much, and probably is going to be the last on the line to recover as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's, and it's like, I think it's what's so needed at a time like this too. But, you know, and again, like, I think the online thing is great for those who want to be a part of something and only have their living room to connect. Like, that's definitely a necessity. But for me, like the dance, it's so much about the physical connection and about the kind of camaraderie you have with your local community and with the international community, in like just a very real, physically present way. That it's just been hard. Like, I haven't found a way to fully put my heart in the online thing.
I get it. I've tried it, and in a sense, I really enjoyed it, especially in the spring, because it was a big opportunity to almost practice or keep practicing, but it's definitely far away from anything real or anything what we had. But I don't know if you feel this, but sometimes I think that there's a tendency to, you know, also idealize a little bit the things that we had. And they're taken away right now. So it's so easy to forget a lot of things and just think of like, the life we had and the community and the lifestyle, everything was glamorous. But but it wasn't, right? Like, it's life. No, even before the pandemic, it has everything. So maybe my question would be, what do you miss and what you don't you miss from the things that we used to do?
You know, definitely don't miss like traveling like Thursdays and Mondays or Fridays and Mondays, like being in two airports or three airports by the end of the day and like carrying suitcases around. Like that was, it's nice to step back and have like my suitcase just in a corner for so long and not worry about like getting in that routine of packing. The travel was hard, I think. But other than that, I think what I miss is definitely just like the live music and the people, you know? Like I was blown away when we went to Sofia. So when Sofia Swing Dance Festival, because they had to like throw their event, like basically, I think how it was with their government funding, they had to throw this event, otherwise their scene would tank, right? And so they were put in a position where it was like, okay, you know, we're definitely going to take a loss, but we're going to test everyone and we're going to put this event together. And we decided to do it. Everyone was super skeptical. And then all those anxieties and fears of like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Traveling during this epidemic and, you know, all of this like anguish. And then once we got there and we actually were all dancing, I think it was just mental. There was such joy. There was like the music and all of our friends. Like it just, it was a huge reminder of like, wow, this is literally like I think the best thing I've experienced in my life, this dance. And it was a reminder of why, you know?
Totally. And everyone came in such a different feel and mood. It was way less about any kind of showing off, just about showing up and being there, right? With each other.
Yeah, like that's one of the things that I've always, as you know, I've always felt insecure about in the scene, is like this need to kind of like prove yourself or to have your name out there, or, you know, it's like, I don't know, there's always this huge attention to like, you know, the competitions and what people are doing, what performances you're going to create. And I think the insecurity that I've always had has been like going online and seeing what other people are doing and then being like, oh man, am I doing enough myself? You know, like this tension. And it's always been online. So I could always just like disconnect with social media and then go to the events themselves and be like, oh yeah, this is why I do it. And I think going back to like what this whole epidemic like brings out in me and my resistance to the online is it puts the dance in that space where it is about like putting yourself out there. And like, I feel this inherent kind of like competitiveness in myself that probably doesn't exist outside of myself, but I see everyone else doing like really great shit. I'm like, oh man, like, am I even capable? Of course, like we didn't even have a dance studio. You know, we're dancing like on tile in our kitchen and we couldn't rent a space for a while. Alice had like a small little tap board that she would tap in our room. But like, there's no way to train. And so then going online and seeing everyone like kill it and put new material out and feeling like I'm behind it. It was like, it exacerbated that feeling that I had in the beginning before the confinement of just going online and seeing people like put content out, like here's what this is my new choreography I just made. I'm like, oh, that's good. But I'm a little jealous. And then online, it's like they can, in reality, I could have like found a way. There's always a way, but I chose other priorities during the confinement than like trying to push the dancing online in that space.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that why I think I loved working with you, and I really hope we can continue after. But it's your ability of just really be honest and open about things that I don't think a lot of people talk in the community, like as a full-time dancer, all the, you know, we would share insecurities and our fears. And it's like these talks that we would have almost at every event was almost like a little checkpoint, at least for me.
Yeah.
you know, to see like, okay, where is my heart in this? Why am I doing this? Am I doing this for the right reasons? What's my insecurities? And am I the only one feeling that? And then every time we would meet, because you're so honest and open about them, I felt like it was almost like a mirror to check from each other. Like, are we delusional? What is happening? Why are we feeling this? You know, and
it's funny.
Really helped.
It's funny. I feel the same. Like you say, it's like honesty. I felt like you had just an enormous amount of, you have an enormous amount of confidence. So like we would make a decision to teach something or to perform in a certain thing. And maybe where I would have hesitations and be like, I wonder, like, you know, like it's easy to go out and perform and rather than think about like authentically putting out what you want to create and what you want to say and what is your voice, to think, oh, I wonder how it's going to be perceived. And then like let that guide. And I think you did always a really good job of being like, oh, let's calm down that little voice and let's just have fun and do it for us.
The fact that we live in different countries, yet we get to see each other so often. That's such an interesting dynamic where, of course, a lot of people would ask, how do you manage and how's that working out? But I think it had its challenge in the sense that, you know, we would teach together for a weekend or train, and then we would go to our homes where we either dance or train with different partners, or maybe we dance with our team and, you know, other teachers. We get different ideas. Maybe we go on a workshop and then we meet back again after a week or 2 weeks. And we're a little bit changed and we've grown even in 2 weeks. So we have to again find each other. And, you know, we would have like so many discussions of like, but maybe we should start teaching that way, but no, maybe that way. And every time I feel like, you know, we would have to like refigure out what is this that makes us us. And I think that's, you know, also what makes us grow a lot.
I think what it comes down to, because like when I think about us being apart for the time, like if we're teaching 2 weekends and we go back home, that time where we're home and we're apart, like you're in Lithuania with very like awesome dancers, you know, with whom you're collaborating. And like, there's a very specific mentality in Lithuania. There's like an approach. And then like, I'm going back and we're working like with, you know, like more Alice and, you know, like Remy. And so there's a very different approach there. And so like, we draw from these different approaches and come back. But I think one of the things that kept like, that kind of holds maybe our, you know, like that keeps us together, like the glue is like, you know, we've always basically been invested in the local scene. And so we knew going into workshops from, you know, we knew as international teachers already, like what it takes to run these workshops and what it takes to be a local organizer, what it takes to like put things on the line for your local community. And I think like that I deeply appreciate. And maybe what, you know, one thing I feel with, you know, with the scene that's always stressed me out is this feeling of like, oh, you have to like push yourself. It's about like, it's kind of your worth is based on your performance. You know what I'm saying? Like your worth is based off like what videos come out or Instagram, you know? Yeah. But in fact, like when I really think about my worth in the scene or what I'd hoped to create, it was like in, you know, I think sharing how the dance was special for me, like how the elements of connecting to someone that are the most special to me on music. And then like, you know, just kind of like putting that seed in there and letting it grow. And it wasn't so much of like the win first place at, you know, ILHC. It was just like, just share the things that we really enjoy.
Yeah, you know? for sure. And what has helped you during this whole almost a year to, I don't know, stay sane and have hope and just continue?
I mean, there's definitely been ups and downs. Like, I know probably it's, you know, I'm probably not the only, I know many people who have kind of like gone up and down on the roller coaster of like feeling motivated to like feeling like, whoa, there's a, you know, like a little coup de depression, you know, like a little hit of depression where you're like, shit, oh man, like, when is this going to be over? When we were first in lockdown, I started running a lot because I couldn't like be in the apartment. So I was like running like 16 kilometers, just like doing long runs, and it would just clear up my mind. And so it'd get me out, get me in my body. But then when Alice and we decided, you know, like in June, we were like, we'd always talked about having a baby, but we just never knew really kind of like when we would try. And then at some point we're like, look, if we have a year off, maybe now's the time. And right away it worked. And so we're like, oh my God. Okay. So the apartment we had in Montpellier is like 30 or 40 square meters. That's, you know, it's not a huge space. And for two people and a baby, it was like, okay. But the Alice's dad has a house, you know, and it's like right on the seaside and it's beautiful, but it needed a lot of renovation and it required work that he wasn't able to put into it because he's retired and he's living in the countryside. And so it's just kind of sitting there and we're like, hey, listen, we can renovate it and we can actually like properly move into it and maintain, take care of it. And it gives us a space to like raise a child. And so we did that. And the process of renovation has been insane and brutal. And like there's a junkyard nearby. We've gone there like more times than I can count, you know, like just to throw out crap, like break down walls, throw out, you know, rubble. And like to the point where like, I know these guys on a first name basis, the guys that work in the junkyard. I don't know if I should be proud of that.
From the dancers to the junkyard workers. Hey, you found your new community. It's okay.
But no, they're actually really cool. Not, like legitimately, I got them, I think on one of the last trips out there, I got them like each a really nice beer. I was like, guys, thank you, you know, for, because it like they help you out and stuff. Anyway, the point being is that we've spent so much time renovating. Like I was just, you know, breaking down walls, putting in installations, like, and I think with all of that, it kept me quite occupied. And a lot of like learning new skills, you know, like if I had to install something that I never installed, going on YouTube, trying to look up a tutorial, trying to learn it. Like right now, today, I started the dance floor in our garage.
And yes, yes, yes.
That is super exciting because again, like not dancing has been a bit mental. And so I've just been waiting for the opportunity. But we finished most of the renovations in the house. So now the garage is like, that was like the big finale is like putting the dance floor in. And I think 1 year ago, if you would have like said, hey, like this is where you're going to be in 1 year, I would have been like, no way. Like, I don't believe it. Are you guys doing anything online still or in-person classes are nixed, I imagine?
No, we had a little gap and we had in summer and then a little bit in the autumn, but basically in October, we had to close everything, all the live classes and anything else. We also moved out from our studio already in before summer. So yeah, some online classes have been going on, but it's more, you know, like a lifeline just to keep things, to keep the blood running. The few excited people that want to keep dancing, we, you know, we try to meet up online and have some classes. But apart from that, it's really low key. But I'm also, I can't say I'm too sad about it because trying to keep something running right now, even a lot of online classes, or I don't want to even think about, you know, having a studio space and figuring that out, that would be way too stressful. So I kind of look at this moment more of an opportunity to learn new things and experiment with new things, this podcast included, or, you know, new job and so on. And I compare it to like some sort of a gap year, you know, when you finish school, you take a year off and you go volunteer in Africa or wherever, and then you come back and then you start your studies. So I feel a little bit like that. Like, I feel like my whole life has, you know, almost like stopped and there was a pause, and now I have to figure it out somehow with some dancing in it, but also a lot of new things. But I'm still hoping that we will come back to the dance. And I feel like there's going to be a very big appreciation that after, you know, doing full-time dancing for some years now, I must admit, I lost a little bit the gratitude for doing this as your life. That's, you know, it's crazy.
It was, there were definitely times, maybe because of the traveling and the jet lag, whatever, that you'd get, I'd get a little blasé. I'd be like, and I wouldn't bring my 100% energy, maybe. I feel like now I'm like, that'll never happen again. but.
How is it with coming? For a while, like, you have almost like two homes, at least. You have, you know, France and States, and probably France right now is getting more and more like your home. But how is that feeling, you know, like having your family in States, and also with everything and the chaos that's been happening there? How do you feel about it?
Well, my dad was just vaccinated, so, because he's a healthcare worker. And so I'm not too worried about them in terms of COVID. And, but as far as like having two homes, definitely COVID and like having a, you know, a baby, preparing to have a baby is, I've really started to have a mental transition where I feel like home is here in France. And I think it's led to like feelings of confliction, you know, because it's so hard to like, I've always gone back to the States a few times a year, and I think, you know, hopefully that'll continue. But we struggled a lot with Alice getting into the country, into the United States, because even though she's my wife, of course, like, immigration doesn't care. And because they see that she's an international worker, they put her into like really heavy duty interrogations. And if they suspect you're working in the States, you know, and you don't have a work visa, they can send you out on the next flight home and refuse you entry for the next 5 years. And this has happened to some dancers, and like, it was very close on two occasions to happening to Alice. And so we went through the process of getting a visa. We, you know, that was for, I think, reasons pertaining to the Trump administration, that was refused, because the USCIS, the immigration office, has received like major cuts and pressure from the Trump administration. Long story short, that was kind of like a hope to be able to travel in and out of the country and visit more frequently. But it feels like right now that it's just like the thought of going back with a baby, having Alice go through interrogations, you know, and like, it's just so unpleasant. With everything that's happening in the States too, it just doesn't seem like a place I really feel connected to, actually, other than just family and like, you know, the nostalgic, you know, places around where I grew up. The actual United States as a country just doesn't necessarily right now reflect what I feel speaks to my heart. It's bittersweet.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah. What do you think is like the biggest change in you personally, like on any level, that you've overgone in the last year or so? Could you think of something?
Yeah, it's a tricky question because I feel like there's been so many changes. This long silence is probably going to be one place where you might want to edit.
No, I'm going to keep it so everyone knows how long and deep you're thinking. They're going to be like, Peter is such an interesting person. He thinks so deeply.
Little do they know, I'm just like having like...
You're like, I want more chocolate.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I think the situation has, maybe it hasn't changed me so much as I've like realized how you know, like there's a lot of gratitude that I have now for the friends and the community, and like I definitely would not take it for granted now, you know, talking to friends and being around friends when I get the chance. And I think at home here, the friends that we do spend time with, you know, we have a little handful of friends that we try to see regularly despite the restrictions. You know, we do it with the restrictions to the best of our ability, but it's like those relationships, I realized the importance of what it is to maintain them. And so that's been like also really what's keeping me sane, but very important is just realizing like how it's an opportunity, I think, and it has been an opportunity this past year to just try to make the most, you know, with the people I love around here, and so that's been cool. But man, I honestly, I have no idea how I'd say if I've changed, if any. Definitely totally freaked out to have a baby in a good way. And like major peaks of like, you know, hitting major peaks of like excitement and total like anxiety to be a father.
Yeah. I wanted to say I can imagine, but then I realized I cannot imagine. I only have a cat. That's as close to the baby as I can get right now.
Well, you know, I'm hoping that if I can like really do a good job of taking care of a baby, maybe Alice will let me get a dog.
Amazing. You know, I can say one thing, what I thought that was a little different, but it might have been the moment where we met, because actually, it's not true. We have seen each other in September, so it hasn't been a year. I completely forgot about Sophie until you mentioned. So yeah, we've seen each other in September, and we had a few good coffees, you know, outside in the main square of Sofia, and it just felt like, even with all these crazy things happening and pandemic and baby on the way and us even being in a festival, I felt you were calm, like you were almost calmer than pre-pandemic in a sense.
That's funny.
You know, that's the impression I got, or some sort of just in peace with so many things that are happening, you know. And I guess maybe life in a sense was so chaotic when we used to travel so much, and we were also more exhausted in a sense. I don't know. But when we met in September, I really felt like, wow, like you almost like have come to terms to like so many things.
Well, I don't know what I was eating, but I could show you some of it now. I think, you know, we were meditating quite frequently. So like we had a group of friends. It was mainly Haley who was organizing, Haley in Berlin, and Jonas as well. And so like we would in the mornings, wake up early. And so I tried to get in a routine of like wake up early, eat more or less healthy, exercise. And I think like, I mean, when you look at like mental health, I feel like in my own case, the times that I felt the worst, I can look to it and be like, okay, at that time, was I eating healthy? Was I getting enough sleep? And was I exercising? And usually one of those three was like out of whack. And I think like often with the travels we were doing before, the sleep was like really hard because you just, you know, like I remember going to festivals when I had first started and you'd stay up like all night partying. And of course it's like your one vacation or your one of their few vacations in the year where you go out and do these festivals. But then when you're doing them every single weekend, it just takes such a toll. And so like sleeping on planes, trying to catch up and like having like issues because your body is like contorting to the like airplane seat. Anyway, so I felt like in the beginning, I felt very healthy. I felt like, okay, I'm meditating. I was pretty in touch with friends. And I was getting decent sleep and exercising. I feel like I've lost a little bit of that though recently. Like I still feel at peace, but maybe at that time I felt also that things would get back, you know, that, and now it's not that I don't think they, you know, like they won't get back to normal. Like I really do think they'll get back to normal, but it's just the amount of time that has elapsed is enough where like you're kind of forced to reconcile with some existential, you know, subjects. You know, like I think when you're working as in any capacity, there's some degree of worth that you get from that work, you know, and that worth is like, okay, it's how you define yourself and what you feel is, you know, important in that like hierarchy of like your needs. You know, and as a dancer, like it was awesome. That worth came from like socialization and feeling like I can contribute to something. I think one of our basic needs is like having this desire to contribute in some way to something that's beyond ourselves. But maybe now with the amount of time that's elapsed, I find myself asking, you know, like what does it mean for me to find that sense of self-worth, you know, outside of the dance, outside of any way that I've previously identified myself, you know, or you know, out of anything that I feel has defined myself. So that's a really tricky question. And the amount of time that's elapsed, it really like, if I'm not careful, it can easily get like cyclical. I'm constantly thinking of like, okay, what next? What can I do? I just need something to do, you know, not even in terms of like, I need a job, you know, just like basically to survive, but like needing something just to feel connection, to feel like a sense of worth as you extend yourself beyond yourself to others. I don't know if it's the same for you.
No, for sure. I mean, we also, a lot of our self-identity is connected to the dance or to whatever activity you're doing in life. If it takes a big part of your time, you associate yourself with that. And it's very hard to dissociate that. And when you lose that big part, I feel like the question that I think we got to ask, and I believe a lot of other dancers, like, who am I? Who am I without this part of my life? You know, and it's not an easy question, but it's like it's worth answering it because, you know, dance or other activities might come and go and things might change and we might not have these things. But if we don't know who we are without them, it just makes it everything harder. But, you know, in the summer, we went on holiday for 3 weeks. We were traveling amazing, beautiful Greek islands. Wow. You know, in a sense, the best trip But the other part of me was really struggling because this was a period where, you know, I was working in one school and during the summer, and then autumn wasn't sure. So I was in like this gap where, you know, I wasn't really dancing. I knew the pandemic is going to go on. So I knew that the normality is not going to come back. And I was like in between. And I just remember, you know, we're on the ferry, the blue water, the sun is shining, everything is great. And I can't help but think of like, but who am I? Who am I? Am I a dancer anymore? Can I like not dance for a year and then be a dancer? I have no idea. What other parts of my life should I explore? And, you know, a part of me was very, very lost.
Yeah. And after having a conversation with a friend recently about this, he said something that really struck me, which was how much of these feelings are really, you know, are coming from societal pressures. Like imagine that we lived in a world where you had like universal basic income. Imagine that you had all your needs met, and then it was just up to you what you want to do with your time. I think that like that's not a situation that many people can even envision being in, you know, because society puts this pressure to do more, to achieve more, to pursue more. And suddenly when you're in a place where like, okay, what if like you have the baseline met and you don't like you have a physical, like a real block, like, you know, this COVID, like this physical block, but also like a very real block to prevent you from striving towards success in any societally defined way. You're just left to your own devices. But like, that's where I think the question is asked, like, who am I?
Yeah.
I think for me, something that's, you know, I go back to when I started dancing, and I remember I had a really challenging period of my life, and I kind of had agoraphobia. It was a bit hard to leave home. I just had like some difficulties that I was going through, and a friend of mine was like, oh, there's this swing dance class. Of course, I knew nothing about swing dance, but like, I knew just enough to be like, I'm interested and I'll try it. I have nothing better to do. But actually going out to take the classes was really stressful. Like, I'm sure I told you this a thousand times already, but just driving out, it was like an hour drive to go to the class. And it was at a college campus. It was like all the like young, hip kids, you know. It was a little bit jivey, you know, but whatever. But on the way out, I'd just be like, okay, you know what, get past this exit. Like there was an exit. And if like I felt too scared or too like I had too much anxiety, I just like hit it, turn around, go back home, and I'd skip the class. But like, you know, just sit, get through it. And I felt like it was that class like introduced me into, I think, like the human element of like how swing can be therapeutic, like actually connecting to someone, like non-verbally having this conversation where you feel like you get to know someone better, they get to know you better. And it's like joyous for the most part, you know, it's like the music's fun and exciting. And that really was a pivotal point for me where I started feeling really, really good for the first time in a while, you know, and I started getting out of the house, and then I got obsessed with swing, and then I got too obsessed with swing. but now, you know, like I find that thing, which has been like my therapy, you know, it also just like became my drug, you know, it's like your crack, you know, but then without it, it's like that existential question became even more pronounced. Because I started going back to like, wow, what it's done for me all these years, not just like as, you know, an aspiring artist in some sense, like hoping to make art, you know, in my little way, but just like humanly what the dance has done for me. And like, yeah. And so going back and thinking about all of that, and then like just taking apart those layers of what the dance has done for my life to being like, okay, now what is it without this dance? That's, yeah, that's a crazy, crazy question. Perhaps like we'll have to, you know, do an interview in like 10 years where I can like finally answer that question.
I know.
But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What's been the most positive thing to come of this whole experience?
I think.
Other than your cat.
My cat, you know, also being able to be in the same country, in the same house with Dimitris, instead of, you know, maybe different continents. I think also just discovering so much about myself. I didn't know that I wanted to do certain things like writing or, you know, journalism, something that I just never thought I would get to do, even though they were always part of my, I don't know, hobbies or things that I had in mind, interests. But a little bit because I had to think of a different job or a different way of income, I didn't feel like I want to push the online thing as well. So all of these things, just I realized I have to put a different, you know, I take a different road. So and that's, I'm really happy to have gone that way, because even though I'm really looking forward to come back to the dancing, and you know, if things would come back, I would probably, you know, quit everything I'm doing and just come back to that. But at the same time, like, I found new interests, and I found that I do want to write, and I do want to work with that. And I didn't even know I could do that. I really did not have that, you know, self-confidence in that. It was something that, you know, like just a little hobby you're doing on the side, and you have no idea if you're any good or not. And now, like, I feel like this, just because it became my job and, you know, I get paid for it, I'm like, okay, I guess I can actually do some of it, you know? So this, I just think I would never have turned that way, because, yeah, I wouldn't have said no to dance. And maybe only if, you know, I was like broken or something would happen, I would have to do something else. And I had so many different scenarios in my head, you know, like we would always have like bad scenarios, what can happen, like I'm going to break my leg, and I'm going to, you know, not be able to walk or something. But of course, COVID was never one of those scenarios. So, you know, it's like the worst case scenario that you never thought of happened. And
yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like these things,
it is kind of nice that everyone's in the same boat though, you know?
Yeah. Like,
I do think also, I mean, everyone's in the same boat. So it's not like you break your leg and then you're like, oh my God, I have to watch all my friends, you know, and I'm so jealous. But on the other hand too, I do think that when you look at the history of like our little Lindy Hop scene, and you go back to like when Lindy Hop exploded, it was after the Great Depression. Of course, there was the revival, you know, after like the Gap commercial, but like 2007, 2008, that was when, like, you know, when you had a housing crisis, there's a lot of insecurity, and that's where like people started just dancing. And that's when Alice started really teaching, is because she was in school to be an architect, and there was just suddenly no work. The market was like pretty, you know, dried up. And then she just started dancing. She's like, I've got, you know, nothing else to. So I think that with these moments, like this epidemic, brings so much like need for connection, that just like after the Great Depression or after 2008, like I guarantee, like probably the amount of dancers that'll, you know, or people that maybe were on the fence about dancing and frequently going out, probably will explode once things are opened up again.
Yeah, I think so. And exactly because of that human element, you know, that I really miss traveling and teaching together, because, you know, we are performers, we are artists, we are dancers, but I feel like that human element of us also teaching and being with people, it's something that is really missing, you know, because if we were only artists, we could be in our living room and just create choreographies and, you know, whether film them or do something. But I feel it's way more complex than that. And that's exactly why, you know, I really love being in this community, is that we are going, and a lot of the time we're actually like teaching or showing people how we're dancing. And and that thing is, you know, lost for a little bit, but hopefully, you know, people are going to be thirsty for this.
I totally think so. But until that point, it is a little bit of like, what's going to happen?
What is your, like, to kind of finish off, what is your hope for the community in general, maybe your local community or, you know, the big community, to come out on the other end of this pandemic?
I think one of the issues that has come up with the COVID crisis has been the racial injustice in the United States. You know, so the Black Lives Matter movement, actually, even in France, we've had huge demonstrations because over here, of course, there's like major racial inequality as well, given that France had colonized many countries, and you have like a lot of inequality built into the systems around that. So I think that with everything that's happened in the United States, it was a chance for the community to be introspective and look at, like, wait a minute, like, are we just doing this dance like willy-nilly? Are we just doing it because it's fun? Like, what due diligence are we doing? The, you know, the history and the culture, specifically the, you know, the culture from which it comes. And so I'm hoping that we can re-examine equity in the dance, you know, as we get back into it. And I know that already within our school locally, we're going to be much more proactive. And I'm really lucky because I have people that are just like, you know, super proactive on this front. So like Leti and Fernando, you know, are people working with Montel Swing. And so I think that it's an opportunity where we're going to be able to look at the scene and say, and contextualize a bit more of our teaching into a larger picture where we can see what the impact of the dance was socioculturally at the time from which it came, and like, and still what it can be today. And we can try to work towards making, you know, making it that.
Yeah.
So that's on, that's one side of like, you know, what I would hope to bring. I think how that I would place that into the teaching is really trying to re-examine, like in class, what's the most necessary in teaching? Like what are the most necessary elements in teaching for transmitting this dance in order to align it with the culture from which it came and to pay an homage to that? So I think that the teaching itself pedagogically is something I'm actively thinking about, how I would re-examine my place as an instructor, where I can do a better job. I don't have the answers at the moment for exactly how I would, you know, but I'm just asking the questions and trying to educate myself. But also, like, the dance is just like, you know, if it can be overtaught, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's kind of undertaught, then it's just kind of, it becomes a bit impressionistic. Like, it can be overtaught to the point where you get copycats, you know, and people are lacking their own individuality. So I think that, like, this dance has to be like a platform for people to come in and express themselves and find their individuality without feeling like there's a right and a wrong, and I need to copy this thing. I need to use this technique to achieve this goal that I'm striving for. But on the other side, if it's undertaught, then on one hand, it's great. It can be impressionistic. Like people can just get the impression of that thing and try to imitate it. But it also hollows out what the significance of the dance is in its like sociocultural context. And so like finding that balance of, you know, that's something I'm trying to rethink and hopefully like reintegrate into my teaching, into our community.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think similarly. I mean, for the community, definitely, in a sense, more feeling like we're not only, I don't know, partying together, or that we're learning the shape and form of the dance, but it's a little bit more full. So it's more cultural. It's more placed in a context. And I feel that will bring a deeper sense of appreciation of what we're doing. And even though it might be a tricky way to find that balance, but I feel like both for people teaching the dance and the students, this is going to give a different sense of what are we actually doing together, you know? And I think a lot of people quit dance. We talked about this a few times after, you know, a year or two, whether it's local classes or maybe if they're traveling, because they feel like they've reached a certain limit, a certain point. They're like, I get it, but I'm not improving anymore. Maybe I'll find a new hobby. And I think if we present this more as you're entering a culture, and it's not only about your ability to dance in a sense, or, you know, going to invitational levels, but you are part of this community that is also respecting the roots of the community and the music and the artists before, I feel like people will be more inclined to stay and create, you know, kind of a different community.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see that and be a part of it.
Totally.
You know, and and I'm also just, I mean, I really miss, you know, us teaching and, you know,
dancing,
inventing things and dancing and creating. It's really, it's a big itch.
Oh, for sure. That's definitely an amazing thing. I think that I've had with you is that ability to get to a place in the dance where you connect, you know, for better or for worse, but with that one person, where I feel like just spontaneously with the music, things can come up that just I've never done before, or, you know, it just like, I feel like comes from the music and from this intuitive connection.
Yeah.
And that those like little moments, I totally miss.
Me too. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. It was so nice
thank
to catch
you
up.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then hopefully in next week, we'll get to do this again on my podcast.
Yes. Maybe you can just, say a few words, because, you know, Peter just decided to copy me and also do his own podcast.
Well, okay, so it's pretty funny because I literally started interviewing people a few weeks ago, and off the same idea of just like, I mean, for me, really, it was the whole idea of a podcast is actually just a selfish way to connect myself to the people that I care about and see what's happening in their life. But I kind of have been wanting to take it outside a little bit and talk to like healthcare workers about COVID. So I know you've done that in your last episode.
Yeah.
But, I'm hoping to get my brother next week.
Yeah.
Where I'm not publishing anything anytime soon, but I'm hoping to get my brother next week where I can also talk with him, because he's been practicing medicine in New York and in a lower socioeconomic area, you know, and that's like riddled with challenges. And so it's hopefully going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But in any case, Yeah, the podcast thing is, I think it's just 2021 is it's going to be a trending thing.
It is. It's like, what are you doing with your life if you're not podcasting?
It's like, you know, Instagram stories are just going to be replaced by podcasts. You know, people are going to be like, oh, what's happening with Elsie? I'll check in our latest episode.
Or instead of calling your friends, you're like, I want to do a podcast with you.
Yeah, but it's cool. Like, I think it's nice to like sit down and think creatively about how to get things out of a conversation with someone that you feel like you know already everything about.
Yeah,
so that's an interesting challenge.
Yeah, and you know, I had some you know like thoughts about starting this thing because it's something that I think stops me and probably other people from doing some things in life, because there's this thought that, you know, everyone is doing that. You know, I started dancing Lindy Hop later than I found out about it, just because I thought that everyone is doing it. So like this thought in my head, you know, like but I guess it's from fear of being judged, or, you know, people are going to say, oh yeah, great. One more podcast. You know, everyone's doing podcasts.
I mean, hey, I feel the same about like, you know, putting out like a video of myself dancing online, you know, like, oh, everyone's doing it. But in the end, I think the best way to think about it, and this is the way I'm trying to think about it, is like, it's something that it's for you. Like, I am excited to have a repertoire of stimulating conversations with people I care about that I can look back on in like 10 years or in 20 or 30 years, or have my kid look back on and be like, wow, I wonder what, you know, was in my dad's head at that time. Yeah. You know, and it's a time capsule. So I think on one hand, like, and anyone who's going to like judge if there's too many podcasts or someone's doing it, it's like those people are going to forget about it the next day, and I they're probably not taking risks in their own life.
Yeah, but I think it's definitely, you know, just about taking that risk, even though I mean it's a small risk. Yeah. There's people risking way more these times.
It's a small risk, but it's still like, it's still wrought with insecurities and like,
exactly,
it's terrifying for sure.
Yeah, but I think one thing that I really also learned through this year is that I just really like, fuck this. I don't want to reserve myself, because everything can change. And if you have an idea, you know what we said, the stakes are so low. You can just do whatever you have an idea to do. Like, that's fine. Like, you know, and I feel like that's one of my, okay, not regrets, but a little bit. I just feel like through the last year, and, you know, I had moments when we traveled to the festivals and I would have, you know, some doubts about, oh, maybe I shouldn't go in this jam circle because, you know, maybe I don't have anything to show or something, you know, some excuses and like little things that, I mean, they haven't changed anything, but I just remembered them when everything was gone. And it's funny, but I really regret those little moments where I didn't let myself do something for the fear of being judged, for, you know, some insecurities. So
yeah,
with everything that I'm doing right now, I'm really trying to just go against that in a way.
I think that's a super good outlook. I mean, like, if there's one thing I really got out of like the last few months specifically, because with so much downtime and like renovating the house has been great, but it's been like a large, never-ending project. And it's a project that goes more into like interpersonally what Alice and I are trying to create. But as far as myself, like investing in myself, I had neglected some parts of that. And I think what I realized is, if anything, is just like, we really as people need a reason to get up in the morning. You need something to look forward to each day. Like, I'm convinced. And usually in some creative vein, you know, if you're going down that path, whatever it is, that can be a reason. And most of the time that will be fulfilling. And if you fail at it or you suck at it, well, then it's a chance to grow and get better at it. And that process of getting better at it and growing will be a fulfillment that is, like, you know, beyond measure in the long run. But like, just having something to wake up and look forward to in the morning has been really vital, because otherwise it's just easy to be a couch potato and binge on Netflix, which, you know, hey, I've got no big problem with that. But like, yeah, I've realized that the days that I put into, like, practicing guitar, the days I put into writing, which I should send you some short stories that I've written.
Yes, please.
Yes, I'll do that. Anyway, the days that I've done that, or the days that I've, you know, put into, like, creatively thinking about a podcast, the work that's gone into the actualizing it has just been ridiculously fulfilling. It's given me the reason to, like, get up in the morning. And those days versus the days of, like, Netflix, where I don't really have a reason to get up in the morning, but I'm just here, they're so much more rewarding in the end.
Yeah, so true.
So I say, like, hell, anyone who wants to make a podcast, do it. And, like, I'm super stoked to see what comes of your podcast and what comes of mine. And we'll see what happens as they evolve. And, like, at the very least, even if it's just me and you listening to each other's podcast, that's also going to be really cool.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, all right, Peter. Have a more chocolates.
Okay. I certainly will. Yeah, I've been eating a lot of chocolate during the
Thank okay. you so much. Big, big hug. Thank you for tuning in to What a Jazz podcast. This episode wouldn't be possible without music from Dimitri and Papa, and the design by Luna Vilnishkita. Tune in for next week's episode. Take care and goodbye.